Welcome to Watch Out, where we dig through our DVD dungeon, where we scour the endless streaming landscape, all to help you find some kick-ass horror movies. Hello, and welcome to Watch Out, the horror movie review podcast. We're glad to have you with us. Our goal is to provide you with spoiler-free reviews and recommendations for both recent films and horror classics. I am Jason the Terrible, broadcasting from Ottawa, Ontario, and I am joined from Vancouver, BC, as always, by Grave Robber Jeff.
Hey there.
And Slice and Dice and Dave.
What's going on?
And have we got a great show for you tonight. We're all amped up on horror movie Halloween vibes because even though this is going to come out probably at the end of November, we are recording it on Halloween Eve. And I understand you guys had yourself a bit of a Halloween Eve horror movie marathon.
Yes, we do an annual brothers get together. Because even though we live only 40 minutes away, we only see each other once a year. And when we do, we watch nothing but horror movies. So we decided, hey, let's watch the horror movies that we're going to watch for this podcast together.
And so how many horror movies did you watch last night?
Well, see, the issue is, there was a hockey game we had to watch, so that went until 9:30. And then we watched a little bit of a boxing match. So that made it a little longer. So we start. When did we start our first movie there, Grave Robin Jeff? Not 10 o'clock?
Like 10:30.
Oh, 10:30. So then, you know, then so we tried to watch three.
Well, the way you guys always talked about your horror movie marathons, I thought they were much longer than three, but I guess you throw in a hockey game and stuff.
Though. Well, we're getting old, you see. But no, yeah, we threw in a hockey game. Normally we'd start at about 7:30.
I think back in the day we would try to watch four, but then that was just too much.
Wow. Especially one of us was always falling asleep.
Yeah, this year even I started to fall asleep, which doesn't happen, so it's just getting old, I tell you. So we watched about 2.6 movies.
I think I watched 1.2. I had to wake up and watch my mini review this morning.
We originally had the plan of possibly doing a third franchise mini review this episode, but Slice and Dice and Dave said, hey, no way, man. We're doing a horror movie marathon, and you picked a feature based on that.
You know, remember like an episode or two ago, and I was all like, oh my God, the movie cinema. I'm going to all these horror movies. You know what I'm saying? I went to, you know, Pearl and Smile and all that. There was another movie that I wanted to go and see in the theater that was playing at the same time. It was called Barbarian. And the only reason I knew that is because my big time pal of a directing friend, hey, Larry. He goes, hey, have you ever heard of this Barbarian movie? And I'm all like, nah, man. What's this all about? Then he gave me a short synopsis. I said, that sounds fantastic. And then, so I never made it to the movie cinema because I said, oh, I'll make it eventually. Well, it's goddamn on Disney Plus already. I think it's still in the movie cinemas. Can you believe that?
I think you're correct.
So I said, well, I'm friggin' picking Barbarian. I want to watch it, for God's sakes.
And what a pick it was, and we will get to that in our feature review. And in the meantime, I threw at you the mini-review theme, which kind of off the top of my head was any movie with the word massacre in the title. However, strongly suggesting that you don't pick anything from the Slumber Party or Texas Chainsaw variety.
Yeah, that was kind of a good pick there, Jay. Massacres.
Because there's a ton of them out there.
There sure is. There is a lot. And actually, you know what? I found it hard. I typed in the word massacre on Tubi because all the other ones didn't have very many massacre movies. Well, of course, Tubi came up with like 1,000 massacre movies. I was like, God, there's a lot, man. Which one do you pick? So I started just watching random trailers. I probably watched a good 12, 15 random trailers. It was awesome. Some of them looked terrible and some of them looked great.
And I'm assuming that you ended up picking one, so that's great, and we're going to get to that.
You're damn right.
Grave Robber Jeff, any adventures in picking a massacre movie?
Not really. I just used Letterboxd, because not only can you have keywords, you can search by genre as well.
There you go, because you don't want to end up with a romantic comedy with the word massacre in the title.
There was some that weren't horrors, which was interesting.
And Interesting. All right. Well, before we get to our mini reviews, we're going to try something a little different on this episode of Watch Out Horror Movie Reviews. I'm hoping this becomes somewhat of a regular feature because I love countdown lists, and I think everybody loves countdown lists of one form or another. So I'm proposing that we do kind of a random top five list of whatever we feel like at the time. And this episode, I'm proposing that we talk about our top five favorite video games of all time during our life, horror-related or not. What do you guys think?
Well, Jesus Christ, I don't know. Is that horror-related or not? No, I'm just kidding. Hey, that sounds like a great idea, Jason the Terrible. Is that what you wanted me to say?
That sounds like a pre-canned response there, Slice and Dice and Dave, but thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, well, let's jump right into this. Have you guys got your top five list prepared?
Kind of.
Who wants to kick things off? Should it be me?
Yeah, I think so, because this was your brain trust of an idea. Brain child?
Wait a second. What are the parameters here?
Well, in this particular one, it's just the top five video games that you like the most during your life. Doesn't have
to
be...
The entire life.
Doesn't have to be, like, the best quality. Doesn't be have to be the one that took you the longest to finish. Just the ones you enjoyed playing the most.
All right.
For my number five, I'm going to come in with a horror video game, and this is called Phantasmagoria. That was one of the first ones I remember being a scary game, but it was one that we actually played together to try to beat. I think we played it on what, like a 386?
Yeah, 386. The greatest thing was...
I think it was a 486.
486, yeah. The greatest thing was the song. You know what I'm saying?
I don't remember that part at all.
I remember
not being able to get past the part where the guillotine comes down and slices the girl's head in half, and it was so gory over and over again, I actually couldn't watch it anymore. But anyway, I got past it. All right, so that's my number five.
Hey, do you know what was cool about that? Those type of video games were so sick. What was that, mid-90s, eh? Interactive movie video games. Like, there were some sick ones, like Phantasmagoria. We talked about Ripper the other week. Remember that, with Christopher Walken? And like 11th Hour and all those. Those are pretty sick.
And just to finish Phantasmagoria off, it was released on August 24th, 1995. All right, who wants to go next?
I had like a big list earlier today, but it's all changed since I sat down and put my feet up. You know what? I'm going to go with I guess I'll start. I'll start with a fairly new game. It's fairly new. I think it's one of the newer games on my list. At number five, I came in with a video game called Red Dead Redemption, number one. I haven't played number two yet. Now, it's funny because, like, this is by Rockstar Gamings or whatever the hell they're called, and they do all those, like, Grand Theft Autos and stuff. Although I like Grand Theft Autos, I'm not, like, super into them. So I was like, well, and then I'm like, I'm not really a big Western guy, because this is a Western game, eh? But Jesus Christ, was that ever a sick game? The storyline, like what you do and everything, was never boring. And then the ending was just ridiculous. I said, that is such a ridiculous game. So I loved it. Red Dead Redemption. I can't remember when that came out, like 2008 or something?
2010. Thank you very much, Slice and Dice and Dave. Grave Robber Jeff, you're number five.
Yeah, so we already kind of mentioned the interactive movies. This is kind of an interactive movie, but not really. But it's the kind of the combination of Seventh Guest and 11th Hour, because 11th Hour was the sequel to the Seventh Guest. And they were pretty much the same game, where you run around the haunted house and try to solve little puzzles. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, sometimes I cheated.
What?
By Googling the answers, because they were hard.
There was no such thing as Google back then, was there?
There was. So this was like, what year was this? Mid-90s again.
I don't think there was. I'm guessing you asked Jeeves.
No, it was Web Crawler. That's what it was. Web Crawler.
Web Crawler. Yeah.
You were using your Netscape Navigator to use the Web Crawler?
Yeah.
Now, was your pick 11th Hour?
No, the combination of the two.
Oh. Well, hey, 11th Hour was sick. I like that because I played it with you. I remember playing it with you.
11th Hour was 1995, a sequel to the 1993 game, The Seventh Guest.
That's crazy.
I also like
that. That was
game.
A little bit of a horror game.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Okay, my number four is a game I spent way too much time on. This is definitely not a horror game, but it does touch into the simulators. And that was Roller Coaster Tycoon. I don't know if you guys remember me showing you all the parks I came up with for that, but I was quite addicted to Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Yeah, that was a pretty good game. I remember you getting into that. And because of that, I got into it. Do you know what was sick about that game? I got it on a box of cereal. You remember when like cereals used to give you cool stuff in the boxes? This one had Roller Coaster Tycoon on it. And it was the full game and everything.
There you go.
I played it for hours. I enjoyed that. I forgot about that game.
1999. That was one that I just remembered when putting this list together. I'm like, oh yeah, that's top five. So, Slice and Dice and Dave, you're number four.
Yeah, I'm going to cheat a little bit here, Jason the Terrible, just because Jeff cheated the last one here. So I'm going to come in with, well, originally I had one here, but now I'm going to put two because Jeff did the same thing. I'm going to pick Doom 2 and Doom 3. I know they're completely different styles of games because one's like, you know, old school first-person shooter, and then one's like a big-time new school first-person shooter. But God, those were sick games, man. Especially Doom 3. But anyway, they could be scary if you're playing them in the dark. So they're kind of horror-y. Doom 3.
Of course it's horror-y. And so that's 1994.
Yep. And then, well, what was number 3, though?
Doom 3 didn't come out until 2004.
Wow, look at that, eh? 10 years. Well, do you know what's cool about Doom? They made a horror movie of it. Or not a horror movie, but a movie.
That is
correct. With The Rock.
That is correct.
You remember The Rock? He's an actor now.
All right, Grave Robber Jeff, you're number four.
Yeah, this is very difficult trying to scan the banks of the entire life here. And for some reason, I seem to be going towards computer games rather than like Nintendo games or more recent Xbox games or whatever. So this is what I'm sure everyone's played. StarCraft.
Oh, that was pretty cool.
And the sequel, Brood War. And I think we played it together at some point, didn't we? Like, fighting or cooperative or whatever?
Yeah, exactly. That was one of the first times we were able to play a video game together.
It's tricky talking about these without going into too much detail.
I know, we don't want to go into too much detail, but StarCraft came out in 1996.
Ah, mid-90 game.
But I didn't play it until, like, 2002.
Number three. All right. Let's move on to number three. And my number three is also not a horror video game, but it's a video game that I spent a lot of time on and a series that I spent a lot of time on, but I focus on this one because this is the one that I spent the most. And that is NHL 99.
Ah, yes.
That was the first one, I believe that was the first game that all three of us were playing, not really at the same time, but we were able to do a league together. And I played a couple of seasons myself. I won the Stanley Cup at least once. It was a great time. NHL 99. Obviously, came out in 1999.
Yeah, any of those games are fun.
All right, Slice and Dice and Dave, what's your number three?
Yeah, so this one comes down. You remember arcades, fellas?
Yeah.
Remember like a handful, mitts full of quarters and stuff, and we just like shoving them into the arcade machines for days upon days? Geez, we could be rich beyond our wildest dreams if there wasn't arcades back then. So I remember this one because I guess it was the summer that it came out. We drove all around our beautiful province looking for arcades and hoping that a new version of that game would be sitting there. I'm talking about Mortal Kombat 3. That's right, my favorite Mortal Kombat, Mortal Kombat 3. I liked Striker, and he's not in the series very much. Striker.
Mortal Kombat 3 got auto-corrected to Mortal Mom at.
Mortal Mom. I'm going to say 1997.
Mortal Kombat 3 was first released into arcades in 1995.
Oh, wow. A good year for video games.
Yeah. All right. Grave Robber Jeff, you're number three.
Well, this is one I've mentioned numerous times on the podcast. Also a third installment in the series. Wing Commander 3.
That's a good one.
Another interactive movie, but it was just an insanely fun game.
With Mark Hamill, I believe.
Exactly.
And Freddie Prinze Jr.
Well, I'm looking at the cover, and it looks kind of Star Wars-ishy.
Well, it was a lot of fighting in space.
Well, it came out in December 1994, so we're definitely got a sweet spot here in our nostalgic lives, going back to the mid-90s. All right.
Number two, Jason the Terrible.
Yes, my number two is one that's been mentioned already.
Stargate. Stargazer.
No.
Star Wars.
My number two is StarCraft.
StarCraft, oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
I really did like that game, really got into it, and a lot of it was because I got to play with you guys on it. And oftentimes, all three of us, all at once, having these huge... I love the way that you could customize the map and the fights and everything. You could build your own map and put armies wherever you want and have a big free-for-all. Given that that was the first time we could connect over the internet across the country and play games together, that was pretty cool. So yeah. All right, Slice and Dice and Dave, you're number two.
Oh, geez, guys. Well, this is probably the earliest game on my list. I used to say it was my favorite game for the longest time until my number one popped up. So I'm just going to go right at you, fellas. Super Mario Brothers 3. God, what a good classic game that was, eh? With the Takuni suit and the warp whistle, you know? And like friggin' all these different maps, like Gigantor map, and then, you know, ice map and desert map. Ah, what a great game.
I remember.
And then it would take, well, like a good 8.5 hours. I remember one day me and the cousin and Jeff, maybe Jason was there.
I was around.
Eight and a half hours or something.
Yeah. So didn't we have like a bunch of codes to get like unlimited lives or something?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, Super Mario. Love Super Mario. He did not make my top five list, though.
You fool!
I know.
Isn't that funny? I got Doom 3, Mortal Kombat 3, and Super Mario 3.
And Jeff had Wing Commander 3. So there you go.
Oh, holy shit. Yeah.
Speaking of Jeff, what is your number two pick?
Yeah, just so many games. But I went with one called that's also a third installment of a title thingy. Far Cry 3. I don't know if you guys have ever played any Far Cry games.
Yeah, I'm playing one called Far Cry Primal, and I'm not enjoying it. But is number 3 awesome?
I don't know. I liked it a lot.
It's his number 2 pick.
That's pretty good. Of all the games in the world, I hear you, pal. Far Cry 3.
Far Cry 3 came out in 2012.
Wow, that's our newest game.
I think so. It's time for our number ones, everybody.
Oh my god, our number one games.
I think you probably know what my number one is.
Yeah, you big nerd.
But let's announce it officially anyway, and that is my number one video game of all time is Friday the 13th, the game.
Oh, you don't say. I thought you were going to say Tetris. You know what I'm saying?
Or pickup sticks. No.
Or Jumpman Jr. That should have made the list.
Yeah, I wanted to name a bunch of Commodore 64 games, but
Jumpman Jr. That's the best.
Jumpman Jr. or Wargle or Falcon Patrol. But
or the original Ghostbuster game, that was pretty sick.
The Ghostbuster game was one I considered, yep. Yeah, Friday the 13th, the game, not much to say about this. I mean, we just had a Friday the 13th mini-franchise review where we talked on and on about how well they made this game match up with the movies, and I had a great time playing that for well over a year. Met some very cool people, some that still listen to this podcast, in fact. So yeah, that's my number one pick, and very horror-related, if I do say so myself, and that is Friday the 13th. The game. Slice and Dice and Dave, how about you? I think I might know what your number one game is.
Well, it's only a game that I've spent over 6 months of my life playing. I hate how these systems can track how long you've played a game. I've legit played over 6 months of my life playing this game. Isn't that ridiculous? And I still suck. That's the sad part. Because when you're old, you can't make yourself good at games anymore, you see. But anyway, I try, and that's probably why I spend so much time doing it, because I keep trying. Apex Legends, everybody. The greatest game ever made. You know what I'm saying? Like, that, like whoever made the Battle Royale idea, I don't know if it was Fortnite and then PUBG and all those. What a great idea, because no matter what, you could always do better. Apex Legends.
2019. And your life changed forever.
It did. I could have watched so many more horror movies by now. God damn it.
All right. Grave Robber Jeff, you're number one.
Yeah, this is one from the arcade days. Street Fighter 2.
Street Fighter. Are you telling me Apex didn't even make your top five?
I don't believe it. I didn't include anything from the last decade.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes it a little more variety anyway, so...
I figured you guys would talk about those. I was like, might as well pick some different ones.
So Street Fighter 2 came out in 1991. Anything else you wanted to say about that, Jeff?
Just it's a classic that evolved the fighting genre. It was just neat because it was like the first time you could pick like a different character. You had a choice of eight, and it just made it super different, like depending on who you picked.
I was always Ryu. I think he was the most popular, wasn't he, Ryu?
Oh, yeah.
Front and center on the box art. So.
Yeah, there you go. It was pretty cool.
All right, does anybody have any honorable mentions that they want to talk about?
Yeah, God of War, The Last of Us, Nightmare on Elm Street, the video game for the Nintendo. I still play that with the kids nowadays, man. We go bananas on that game, so that's kind of fun. Arkanoid.
What about Bonk's Adventure?
Well, that was fun. Not one of my favorite games, though. Actually, you know what was a sick game? Sonic Adventure for the Dreamcast. I friggin' loved that game.
Any more,
Sega Swirl.
Dream? Yeah, I was just going to say Sega Swirl.
You liked Sega Swirl, too? And then goddamn Base Wars.
Oh, yeah, that was a fun game.
That was a fun game.
There's one that you guys haven't mentioned yet that maybe you've just forgotten about.
Probably. What is it?
It's my number six game, and that would be Carmageddon.
I never cared for Carmageddon. I know Jeff did.
That was a fun one. Endless hours. I want to throw out a shout out to Phasmophobia as well, because I think that's going to rocket up my top five by the time I'm done with it. But I've been playing it for a year, not extensively, but it's got potential. It's just I haven't quite figured out how to be successful consistently at it. So,
how about Simpsons Tapped Out?
I thought about talking about that one. All right. Let us know if you would like to see this segment return or if you'd rather us just focus on the horror movies, but I think there's enough horror crossover, at least in this list, to make it worthwhile. All right, Slice and Dice and Dave, because you picked Barbarian as our feature review, I think you're up first for your first Scream Sack Massacre.
Oh, is that how it goes? Sweet.
Slice and Dice and Dave's Scream Sack of Nightmare.
All right, welcome everybody. Welcome to Slice and Dice and Dave's Scream and Scream's Hack of Nightmares. Yeah, so like I said, I friggin' watched a bunch of little, trailers, you know? And thank God I watched some of the trailers because, you know how I normally pick because of the box art, or I guess thumbnail on these streaming services now? Well, the thumbnail on this was awful, and the name of it I didn't really care for either. But I picked a movie from 2015 starring Robert Englund. You know, he's in there a little bit at least. The Funhouse Massacre. You guys ever hear of that one? Yeah, neither had I. But I tell you what, it's a pretty like good quality movie, to be fair. Anyway, let me read you a little synopsis from our friends on Letterboxd. Murder is all part of the show. Six of the world's scariest psychopaths escape from a local asylum and proceed to unleash terror on the unsuspecting crowd of a Halloween funhouse whose themed mazes are inspired by their various reigns of terror. That's right, 2015's The Funhouse Massacre, directed by Andy Palmer. So there you go, fellas. It's written, as I was doing my research afterwards, as we do, the screenplay is written by Ben Begley, who happens to be in the movie himself. And you know what's also cool? It was based on a story and characters by Rene Dorian, who as well is in the movie as, what the hell's her name? Lori. I actually liked Lori in that movie. A little bumblebee running around and all this and all that. Anyway, so basically we start off up in Ohio there somewhere. Just like that show, The Drew Carey Show, right? They have that song and then he goes, Ohio, at the end.
This made you think of The Drew Carey Show?
Well, just because it's from Ohio. And when you think of Ohio, I think of that. So when he goes, Ohio! At the end of the, I never watched the show, but I just know that.
All right.
I know him more from Whose Line Is It Anyway? But anyway, The Funhouse Massacre. Yeah, so I watched the preview and I said, hey, that's kind of a cool idea, I thought. So I watched it, and then so you start up at this asylum where these, it's kind of like an underground, they're kind of like a little bit below the law because these psychopaths and murderers and all that are being held there without have gone to trial or whatnot, apparently, you see. And so anyway, they get out. Everything gets explained, so it's not just like, well, that's convenient, but it does get explained. They then go to this awesome like Halloween funhouse area. Is it Halloween night? I believe it is Halloween night. Might be the night before Halloween night, which is quite convenient because tonight is the night before Halloween night. Anywho, and this funhouse, it's kind of based on all these six psychopaths, what they did in the past. Well, they're like, hey, this is going to be great. I'm going to go and take over my little section of the fun. And I'm going to just like kill a bunch of people. Because, you know, we're going to open it up to the public and we're going to kill a bunch of people. So that's exactly what happens. Just a little background, a couple of the serial killers. You got Animal the Cannibal. So he's a cannibal that eats people. You got Dr. Suave, who was a murderous dentist. He was a handsome looking guy. I think that's why they called him Dr. Suave, you see. And then you got a dude called the Taxidermist. You got Rocco the Clown, who is a professional wrestler who killed opponents in the ring. And then you got this dude who was a cult leader and fucking burned a bunch of people, Mental Manny. And then a gal named the Stitch Face Killer that you find out later on. So there you go. You got all these serial killers all killing people in random ways. What was kind of cool was I put myself in the place of the people walking through the funhouse while I was watching this, eh? And I'm just like, man, like, imagine finding out what you were seeing was actually real. Because when they're doing it, you know, obviously they're like, oh my God, this is disgusting. But, oh, it's just hilarious because it's a funhouse. Ha ha. You know what I'm saying? But what's happening was actually happening, which was just God awful. A lot of it was very violent and gory and brutal. Now, the only issue with this particular movie is they tried to make it kind of like a horror comedy or a little, some lighthearted bits, I guess, in it. That's the only issue I have with this, is because I did not find much of, like, any of the comedic bits funny. I love how I start laughing. Oh my God.
I was going to say.
So that's the one gripe I have. The acting wasn't the greatest, but it wasn't terrible. But the directing was great. The cinematography was great. The story was like fine. Like, it was pretty good, you know? It's not this like, oh my God, you got to see this. It's so unique or anything. I just thought it was like a good movie to watch around Halloween. You know what I'm saying? And then, do you know what else is funny? You know Toby Hooper?
Yes.
So get this. He did a movie called The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, right? He also did a movie called The Funhouse. Put those two together. What do you got? You got The Funhouse Massacre. Isn't that cool? And do you know who else was in this movie? Clint Howard. He's been in a lot of movies. So there you go, guys. Oh, was I telling you? Yeah, I was telling you that the writer of the screenplay was actually in the movie, yeah? The guy in the movie is a little annoying. He's Deputy Doyle was his name. He's like the deputy in town, eh? And actually, the first time you see him, he's explaining to Sheriff Kate what he thinks happened at a murder scene there in this hotel room. And right off the bat, I said, this guy's hilarious. I love this guy. Unfortunately, that's the only scene that I loved him. He's fine the rest of the way, but he's just not funny. And my opinion is he's kind of there as some comic relief. You might go, hey, why aren't people just calling the effing police? And then why don't they just come and save everybody? Well, there's a few things going on. It takes a while for people to realize that they're actually killing people. And then what happens was somebody plays a prank on poor old Deputy Doyle and says, oh, yeah, there's a murder going on. Yeah, you're an idiot, Deputy Doyle, or whatever the hell he says. And he goes, ah, F you, man. And then he takes his phone off the hook so then nobody obviously can get a hold of him, which is unfortunate because they need his help. Anywho, they figure out what's going on, and then they eventually make their way to the funhouse. There's a lot of killing, a lot of blood. I just thought it was kind of cool, you know? And I thought it was done well. The ending's interesting. There's some heads ripping off. There's some throats being sliced. There's some faces getting ripped off. There's some faces getting mushed up into, like, fences, you know? And then dentist-type killings. And that's some good stuff. I liked it. I actually liked it. Can you believe that? So I wasn't expecting much, but I got a pretty good movie out of it. The Funhouse Massacre from 2015, rated R, only an hour and 30 minutes. Oh, I didn't give it a rating. 7 out of 10.
All right, Slice and Dice and Dave, 7 out of 10 for Funhouse Massacre. I'm wondering how many horror movies out there have an institution of some kind in them that people don't escape from.
Oh, yeah. Something tells me it wouldn't be a very interesting horror movie if there was.
I suppose. What did you think of Robert Englund in The Funhouse Massacre?
Well, it's Robert Englund, isn't he? Horror legend. Robert Englund. You know, I was watching him there, and I know this is a 7-year-old movie now, and I'm just like, why the hell can't he do just one more Nightmare on Elm Street? That's all I was thinking in the back of my head. Wow. But anyway, it was a pretty good movie. I thought it was well done. It wasn't funny, though, and it was supposed to be kind of funny, I think, but.
I see. All right. Well, thank you, Slicen. Great review.
You're very welcome. Thanks. Hey, I watched it on Tubi here in Canada. I got a feeling it's on Tubi in America and all that jazz, too.
All right. Let's move on. Grave Robber Jeff, what did you dig up for your master?
Grave Robber Jeff's Fresh Dig.
Well, there's quite a list from old Letterbox there. And one kind of stuck out as an interesting title. 2015's Dude Bro Party Massacre 3.
Dude Bro Party Massacre 3!
That's a big title.
It sure is, and it would suggest that there would be a Dude Bro Party Massacre 1 and Dude Bro Party Massacre 2. But to my surprise, those movies do not exist. So this is a standalone movie that follows Brent Cherino, who unfortunately his twin brother, Brock, was recently murdered while he was going to school at a fraternity, or while he was in a fraternity going to school. And now Brent's made it his mission to figure out what happened to Brock and get vengeance for his brother. First things off, this movie is not a typical movie. And why it's not a typical movie, I found out a bunch of stuff later. Did you guys ever see or ever go to 5secondmovies.com?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Have you guys ever watched College Humor videos on YouTube?
Nope.
No.
Are you serious? They're pretty popular, and they've been popular for about a decade. I think maybe you've seen them and you just didn't realize it.
Let's go with that story then. Yeah.
No, I haven't seen them.
So 5 Second Movies was all about, for every day between 2008 and 2013, this website came out with a 5 Second Movie. If you're curious how you could possibly have a 5 Second Movie, I would look up 5 Second Movies on YouTube. At the same time, College Humor kind of did like spoof skits of like superheroes and just general comedy skits, very similar to Saturday Night Live, but not like live Saturday Night Live, but you know how they often had those, what do you call it?
Vignettes?
Yeah, maybe vignettes. And a lot of them are super funny. Like, I found College Humor pretty funny. Anyways, the point I bring up all that stuff is because the creators of 5 Second Movies are behind this one. And the only reason this movie exists at all is because of a massive Kickstart campaign that fans of the website contributed to make this thing. So the feel of it is not like a regular movie at all. It's more like one long comedy skit. And at the same time, throwing in a bunch of horror stuff and obviously trying to have as much fun with it as possible with the kills and whatnot. Because they do get very creative, even though it is definitely on the low budget side. But it looks like they had a ton of fun making this movie. But if you don't realize that that's what's going on, it's going to feel very awkward, I think, with how things all develop. And one of the funny things is it's on Tubi anyways, it was a 4x3. And I think they did that possibly on purpose, because at the start they say, "Well, you're about to see Disappeared Forever, but it is only available for you to see because some teenager taped it off of TV. Here it is, what he taped."
So it's found footage.
So it's kind of found footage. And so you get, they also throw in a lot of like commercial parodies because this guy apparently taped it. So in between, every once in a while, it's like, oh, we'll be right back to do Bro Party Massacre 3 after this. And then they do like a commercial and come back and stuff like that. So it seems like there's just so many opportunities to add little comedy skits, which is very consistent with what they did with their other stuff. And I think you're really going to like it, or you're really going to be annoyed by it. I actually liked it quite a bit because it's just the one big comedy thing. So if you do like things like Saturday Night Live, even though I thought kind of it had a South Park kind of feel too, kind of like a live action South Park in a lot of ways. And a lot of people, well, the guy behind 5 Second Movie, Alec Owen, was the main writer and the main star. And I don't know if Dave knows this lady, but Dave, do you know Olivia Taylor Dudley? Apparently she's on Nancy Drew.
Oh my God. Was she in it?
Yeah. And then there's another girl called Skylar Rosalette, who was a mainstay on College Humor. So that's why I recognized her. But if you guys hadn't seen that, you probably won't recognize her. And with a couple cameos as well, Larry King makes an appearance, as well as Andrew W.K., if you remember that guy, as well as Nina Hartley. And I won't blame you if you don't want to say that you know who she is. But anyway, she was a very popular adult actress in the 80s.
Oh.
And so while good old Brent here is trying to solve the mystery, he learns of two prior attacks by some sort of killer they call Motherface, which is obviously a spoof of Leatherface.
Or Quiltface.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. So the fraternity actually survived two previous attempts by Motherface to wipe them all out. And that's why this one is called Number 3. So you do learn that as you go through. But the feel of it is very, very skit-like, not very movie-like. So if you go into it with that expectation, it's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun. And I found myself laughing quite a bit. But it was so ridiculous that it's hard to like it as a whole movie. It's more you like it for all the crazy stuff they throw in there. The ending is something to behold. I'm struggling a bit with this one because, oh, plus they wrote all their own music and sang it, so it was obviously fake music. Yeah, so it's a full-blown comedy. It just feels a bit awkward because it's not as professional as a real, well, it's not like it's not a real movie, but it just seems like it was definitely lower budget. But if you like that type of comedy, like, it's probably going to go be right up your alley. But as a movie overall, like I say, it's hard to rate it high because as a whole, it's just so wacky that as a movie, like, it just didn't make as much sense as, like, a comedy show. But I laughed a lot, so I'll come in at a 6.5 out of 10.
So is it safe to say that Dude Bro Party Massacre 1 and 2 don't exist because some guy didn't tape them off his TV and make them available?
That's got to be why.
It's possible.
The good thing is they do a little, because I was able to be awake for the first 10 minutes of the movie. They do a little recap of what happened in number 1 and number 2.
Oh, just like Friday the 13th.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to pause it and I said, "Jesus Christ, Jeff, is there actually a part 1 and 2?" And then I searched it up and I was disappointed to see there was not.
All right. Well, Grave Robber Jeff, thanks for bringing this one forward. This sounds like something very unique.
I'll say.
I have to say I'm a bit disappointed though that neither of you picked Microwave Massacre.
I was going to, because I've almost bought that a couple times. But
I've always been curious about that. But as you'll see as I jump into the dungeon pick, I didn't pick it either. So,
cool.
Here we go.
Jason the Terrible's DVD Dungeon.
For my mini massacre review, I picked Sorority House Massacre 1986. Why don't we start with a synopsis? Who'll survive the final exam? College student Beth and her sorority sisters are stalked by an escaped psychopathic killer. There you go, escape from a mental institution again. Who shares a strange telepathic link with her. So that's a little twist. But I got to say right off the bat, the synopsis, well, it's a little thing, but Beth is arriving at this sorority house. She's not a member of the sorority. The girls there are even saying, hey, you might decide you want to join us, but she's not a full sorority member. She's just visiting. And she's visiting for Memorial Day weekend, because most of the sorority sisters are going off to do stuff, and there's only a handful of them staying behind. On the surface, this is a pretty paint-by-number slasher movie, but it does throw in a couple of twists, like I said, about the telepathic link and everything, and once you start watching it, you realize that Beth, who is played by Angela O'Neill, her character's having a lot of bad dreams, and dreaming about this guy named Bobby, who's in a mental hospital, who killed his family years ago. And it's got a very Nightmare on Elm Street-ish vibe to it. And it's got the synth score mixed with the classical music score, and it feels very Nightmare on Elm Street. There was a lot of, like, artsy shots in there, like there's blood dripping down the side of, like, from the ceiling onto the side of a candle, and it's very meticulously shot that way. I was impressed by that a little bit. And part of that, I guess I should talk about the director. The director is Carol Frank, who was the assistant to Amy Holden Jones, the director of Slumber Party Massacre. So there's so many things I want to talk about here. Carol Frank worked on Slumber Party Massacre, which was produced by Roger Corman. And Roger Corman said, whoa, we made a lot of money with Slumber Party Massacre. What can we do next? So before Slumber Party Massacre 2 came out, Roger Corman said, hey, Carol Frank, why don't you try writing and directing a horror movie? And Sorority House Massacre was born. You'll notice a lot of similarities to a lot of slasher movies, but the ones that come up in comparison a lot are, like I said, Nightmare on Elm Street and Slumber Party Massacre 2, because Slumber Party Massacre 2 has that sort of dreamlike vibe to it as well. There's a lot of slow motion shots. It's got that quality to it before all of the stalking and the killing starts once Bobby escapes from the mental institution. A big part of the feel of the movie, obviously, is the cinematography. And cinematographer Mark Rachofsky went on to do music videos. It doesn't surprise me to hear that he did that based on watching this movie, because just the style of it. But he went on to do music videos for Def Leppard, for Bryan Adams, for Bon Jovi, for Van Halen, for Tom Petty, for Prince, for Pink Floyd, Ozzy Osbourne, Skid Row, Rolling Stones, and many, 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 many more. Oh, and he also was cinematographer for Teen Witch and Wild Orchid 2. The makeup artist, while I'm talking about the crew here, Dennis Curcio, did special effects for Friday the 13th, the series, and everybody's, or should I say Grave Robber Jeff's favorite, Critters 2. There's a tie in there I thought you'd appreciate there, Grave Robber Jeff.
Cool.
The cast is not so bad, but most of the cast, in fact, all of the cast, didn't really move on to anything much after this. This was kind of a one and done for a lot of them. Like I said, Angela O'Neill was starred as the main character, Beth. When she got the part, she didn't realize that the part required nudity. And so when she found out that her part required nudity, she refused to do it, and she was almost fired. But they were running out of time to film the thing, so they're like, okay, whatever, you don't have to do it. There's a scene in there where a bunch of her friends, they're the last four girls that didn't go away for Memorial Day weekend. Their big thing was to go try on all the fancy clothes of one of their other sisters who's not there. So they're having some fun doing that. At the same time, Angela O'Neill's character is sitting off to the side, not partaking. And it was because of that whole nudity thing, but it actually served the character well, because that's kind of the outsider-ish feel that she had in this movie. Like, she showed up at the sorority house, she's having these weird dreams, she's not feeling comfortable, she's not feeling in a let's party on the Memorial Day weekend kind of vibe. So that kind of worked out. But Angela O'Neill, she only acted in 7 films, including Alien Nation, which was the only one I could recognize. But she went on to be a prop master for a ton of stuff, including Whose Line Is It Anyway, CSI Miami in New York, Grey's Anatomy. And she was in the art department for Apollo 13 and The Haunting and Point of No Return. Like, she's been in the industry for quite a bit. She just didn't have an incredibly successful acting career. We also have Wendy Martell as Linda, Pamela Ross as Sarah, and Nicole Rio as Tracy. And they all have love interests or boyfriends that show up for the weekend as well, but they really just show up to, you know, pad the body count, let's say. It's a very short film. It's only 1 hour and 14 minutes long. So it kind of feels like a long episode of a TV series. I can see how they were trying to add some artsy stuff to this, but at the end of it, it just really follows the plot of most other slasher movies, which is not a bad thing. And when you have likable enough characters, then it's entertaining to watch. And you feel a little bit for them. The killer is known throughout the whole movie, so there's no mystery there, and you see him escape and you see him get closer, so there's not much there to intrigue you. There's a couple little reveals in there that could have been interesting if they weren't predictable. It's just not bad, I guess I'll say. It's not terrible. It's not great. It's a middle-of-the-road kind of 80s slasher. I guess I'm going to rate this my average rating, which is a 6 out of 10. Maybe a 6.5. Let's say 6.5. It's not so bad. Sorority House Massacre. Released October 10th, 1986. Shot in 17 days. Followed by two sequels, Sorority House Massacre 2 and Sorority House Massacre 3, Hard to Die. Both released in 1990. So that's a trick.
Where'd you watch that one?
I watched it on Shudder. I believe it's also available on Tubi, if I'm not mistaken. I'm glad I watched it. All right, Slice and Dice and Dave, it's time to move into our feature review, and you picked Barbarian.
And now watch out for our feature presentation.
Thanks for coming along with us tonight there, everyone. This is a fairly new movie. It was just in the movie cinemas. Now it's right on Disney Plus, so you can go and watch it. Let me read a synopsis from Letterboxd. Some stay for a night. Some stay for a week. Some never leave. In town for a job interview, a young woman arrives at her Airbnb late at night, only to find that it has been mistakenly double booked and a strange man is already staying there. Against her better judgment, she decides to stay the night anyway, but soon discovers there is much more to be afraid of in the house than the other guest. Interesting, eh? So, gentlemen, have you heard of Barbarian?
I saw it come up at the top of the Disney Plus banner, which, given what kind of movie it is, it's pretty impressive that it would show up at the top of the Disney Plus banner. What did you think, Grave Robber?
I had never heard of it.
Well, that's a good thing. And to be fair, I didn't know much of it. I just knew the Airbnb aspect of it, of this woman showing up and there being another person in her Airbnb. I'm sure that's everybody's nightmare, especially late at night in the rain in a mysterious part of town. Detroit. It was Detroit, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't think Detroit people are very happy with this movie, let's put it that way.
Have you read some reviews?
Actually, the reviews on this one are generally very positive. I think it's got a 92% Rotten Tomatoes score.
Sorry, I meant, did you read some like things of people being like, hey, you're making Detroit look terrible or something?
Well, I did, yes.
Ah, interesting.
But I took that comment to segue into the good reviews. Let's say right off the top that this one's going to be a tough one to talk about without spoilers, but we're not going to include spoilers. What we're going to say is that a lot of the fun of this movie, if you can call it that, depending on your appetite for things like this, is finding out where this movie is going to go.
Yeah, hey, maybe we should just stop right here for half a second and say, if you don't know anything about this movie and you're curious about it, let's just say a couple things. It's pretty spooky. It's good. It's worth watching. It's not like overly spooky or gory, but stop right now. Go and watch it and come and join us afterwards. There you go. Hey. That's pretty good of us.
I agree with everything except for the fact that it's not overly spooky or gory. I think it is a very scary movie.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Hey, oh, God, they've already left. Oh, they're going to be pissed off. They're going to be so pissed off with me.
And it's pretty damn gory, too. But
well,
anyway.
It's got its moments. It's got its moments. Yeah. Well, no. I think it's got a couple moments where it's gory, but it's not overly gory. But we'll get to our gory ratings later. Yeah. Okay, we've said our piece. Let's start talking about the movie.
So this is a tale of two movies. From what I understand of how writer-director Zach Cregger developed the story, I think that's how he developed it as well. He had this idea for a scene, And he got the idea after reading Gavin De Becker's book, The Gift of Fear, which is basically a study of when a woman is in a potentially dangerous situation, and you could argue that's like almost any situation where she's alone with an unknown man, be aware of all the red flags. And so he created this first scene, which is basically the first third of the movie, to include as many red flags as he could in front of the main character Tess as she arrives at this Airbnb that's already occupied. The first part of this movie is all about, is she safe or not?
And it's hard to be safe when the guy she runs into is Bill Skarsgård.
Indeed. Oh, isn't he a wonderful person?
Expand on that, Jeff.
Oh, because if people don't know who he is, he played Pennywise the Clown in the It movies.
That's right. Yeah. But is that all he did?
He was also in the series that I always talk about on this particular show, Castle Rock.
That's appropriate, yeah. I didn't put two and two together until I looked him up later. But yeah, if you're showing up in a rundown Detroit suburb and your Airbnb is already occupied by Pennywise the Clown, you're getting the hell out of there. I don't care.
Well, I mean, to be fair, he wouldn't be, you know,
in full clown makeup.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Jesus Christ. But anyway, no, he is kind of like an interesting looking dude in a good way.
It's masterful casting because he seems sinister, but he seems innocent and endearing. And that was so important to the first 40 minutes of this movie because you're right there with Tess trying to figure out if you can trust this guy. Yeah, and you know you're in a horror movie.
Yeah.
But I think the brilliance of this movie is that it, from the 40-minute mark onwards, it takes you in a direction that you did not expect.
Hey, do you know what's cool about Georgina Campbell as well, while we're talking about actors? She was in an episode of one of my favorite TV shows, Black Mirror. You guys ever seen Black Mirror?
I don't think I've ever watched it, no.
Oh my God, it's so good. If you can get past the first episode, which is about... let's say, relations with a pig. If you can get past that, it's one of my favorite series of all time. And she's in one of the episodes. One of my more enjoyable episodes, actually. Okay, where were we? Okay, do we trust this guy? Hey, what's with the goddamn toothbrush on the floor business?
I think that was just that meant that someone was staying there, but maybe it was more than that. I don't know.
Let's just say there's a lot of things in the first 40 minutes that are kind of left dangling afterwards. What do you say about this? It's very well put together. And one of the things that Zach Cregger used to describe, he talks about the movie being a Fincher movie on the top floor and a Raimi movie in the basement. From a plot perspective, as far as we can go with this is to say that things start going crazy when Tess finds a passageway in the basement.
Yes.
To know exactly what you're in for with this movie is kind of to spoil the fun of it. And
that's the thing. That's why I say go and watch it right now. Yeah. It's awesome.
She finds something that is going to trigger people. If you're a woman watching this movie, what she finds in the basement is going to set you up what you think you're going to expect for the rest of the movie. And it even twists that around. There is a lot here to trigger people. There's a whole other character or two, but there's a whole other character that we haven't even talked about yet because he doesn't show up until about the 45-minute mark of the movie, driving down the Pacific Coast Highway.
And that caused Dave to ask me, was this an anthology?
Because
this new character seemed to come out of left field.
But hey, yeah, Justin Long, eh? What a character. Yeah, and then, you know, his little story business here, eh? Getting canceled and stuff. Because that's kind of forefront in our lives these days.
This movie has a lot of agendas. Touches on a lot of topical topics.
Topical topics?
Yeah, those topical topics.
Oh, yeah, lots, eh? Let's talk about what... Let's spew out quickly some of the things it talks about. Hey, it talks about, like, police.
It does not like police, this movie.
Yeah, that one bugged me. That situation, I was like, come on. And then it talks about in the film industry, like calling out somebody for doing something abusive, potentially, right? And then losing your name.
There's a lot of implied abduction and sexual assault involved.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Lots of that, right? Yeah, there's lots to dig into.
There's a lot of trigger warnings in here, I think. You just don't know. The way that they reveal what they reveal is very effective. This is a very scary movie, I thought.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you know one thing I love? Do you know what one thing I love in horror movies? I love when it's super dark and then you just start seeing something terrifying coming out of dark, nice and slow. God, I love that shit. You know what I'm saying?
Or fast.
Or fast, yeah. Yeah. I think I prefer the slower business. You know what I'm saying?
I think it happens both ways in this one.
Yeah. That was pretty sick, eh?
I got the feel that this was almost combining the intensity and the effect of a found footage movie without being found footage.
Do you know what movie this effing reminded me of that I just watched recently? That ass sucking As Above, So Below with the catacombs in France or whatnot.
There you go.
I mean, not to that degree, but I mean it, a little bit of that. Actually, you know what? I really enjoyed the beginning of this movie and how the first night went with them yipping and yapping and stuff. I liked how it set up everything. But then she goes off to her ass smoking a job interview. And then she's like, oh, yeah, where are you staying? The gal that's interviewing her. Oh, I'm staying in what the hell type of area was that called?
The bad part of Detroit.
Yeah, I'm staying in the bad part of Detroit, she says. She goes, oh, my God, you shouldn't be staying there. You got to be careful, young lady. She's like, oh, hey, I can handle myself. Wink, wink. And then anyway, so there you go. No, and she's like, no, really, be careful. And then that's when all the stuff starts happening.
Did you guys pick up on a lot of the red flags during the first part of the movie?
I think so.
Like if you put yourself in her shoes, and there's the whole thing about the guy being so intent on serving her something to drink, you know?
Yep, yep. You know which one would have really got me to be like, you know what, maybe I shouldn't be here? The open door business.
When the door just opened?
Yeah.
Yeah, but there was mystery around that. We don't know what happened.
But that's what I was saying. Like, I really enjoyed that first bit because of, like, say, the red flags.
Tess has to eventually get to a comfort level with Keith. We haven't really said his name, but...
His name's Keith.
To be able to explain what she does later. Because there's a lot to this movie where... It's the classic scream at the screen. Don't go in there. Oh, get God, the hell no. out. What the hell are you doing?
And yeah, but there was so much promise. Because like, say when she first finds that one particular door, you know, what was her response there? Hell no.
Yeah, there was a lot of realism in here.
And I said, you're damn right, hell no. Get out of there.
Let's jump back to the AJ character who shows up about halfway through. Played by Justin Long. What has Justin Long been in?
Jeepers Creepers!
Yes. And what else?
Well, he was in Galaxy Quest.
Huh. Oh, he's in the TV series Goosebumps. That's filming here. Oh, he's in an episode. Oh, yeah, yes. That was a sick episode of Creepshow. Night of the Living Late Show. That was a pretty cool episode. He was in that.
In the IMDb trivia, it says Justin Long made this movie 16 years after he appeared in Dodgeball, and 4 of 63 people found that interesting.
Oh, he's in that movie with Christina Ricci, Afterlife. That was a cool
one. Oh, God, that's a great one.
Yeah, so it's been a lot of... Oh, Drag Me to Hell? It's been a lot of sick movies, man. Justin Long, man. Yeah, so this movie, an estimated $10.5 million budget... They made that back on opening weekend alone, which was September 11th, 2022. And already, gross worldwide is $42.5 million. So I tell you what, my guess is there's going to be a Barbarian 2.
Well, this is definitely the story of a horror movie making waves and improving its release situation.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a good time to throw it on Disney Plus.
So the original production team, in April 2021... One of the main financiers for this film, Eric Tavechian, died from cancer, unfortunately.
Oh, man.
And so they were scrambling around to find more money, and they eventually secured financing from New Regency, who increased the budget, and also made it so that 20th Century Studios became the film's distributor. And of course, 20th Century Films is owned by Walt Disney, so that's why it's on Disney Plus. The movie was released originally at San Diego Comic-Con, July 22nd, 2022. I mean, this just happened. Mm-hmm. And because of the reaction there and the reaction to the test screenings, it got a full theatrical release and went to Disney Plus pretty much immediately. Yeah, it's the case of a movie that people are appreciating for being something a little off the wall and different, and done really well, acted really well, and it's really scary. Again, I say that. Because we can't get into too many of the plot details beyond what we've said already, I think we got to go into our individual rating segments so that we can give a little more color to what you can expect on this without actually ruining those expectations for you. So
one thing I guess we could say before going into the ratings was that Justin Long character actually owns the Airbnb that they were staying at. That's kind of how he's connected.
So to just recap a little bit, Justin Long's character AJ is accused of sexual assault on one of his films, so he's going to have to fight that in court, and he's going to have to spend a lot of money, and so he has to liquidate a bunch of the properties that he owns, some of which being in Detroit, one of which being an Airbnb that just happens to be the star of the story. But what he does when he gets there, what they do with that character is kind of unique, I would say. And yeah, not what I was expecting. And I like when movies play with your expectations like this one did. All right. Let's get into those individual rating segments now, gentlemen. Let's start with the scary meter. I will start with the scary meter this time in a weird twist of expectations.
What?
I am going to say this is an 8.5 out of 10 in terms of scary.
That's pretty scary.
And I think a lot of it is because you just don't know what kind of movie you're going to get.
Yeah.
And so that's why we're being careful about this one, because you can put yourself pretty easily in Tess's position just from being in this weird house, having this weird stranger there. But then the discoveries she starts making are just more and more intense. And so it's the unknown, and it's the execution of this script is pretty masterful. So yeah, 8.5 out of 10 for the scary on my opinion.
Yeah, you're darn tootin'. I remember when one of the revelations of what's going on happens, and I went, Jesus Christ, I think. Did I do something like that, Jeff? Did you see that? Or something like that? I was like, ah! I tell you, it's fun watching horror movies with people. But
that's why I wish I had seen this one in the theater. I think it would be a good one to see.
I know. Hey, I think we could have went and saw it in the theater, but then we would have had to pay money. Jeff, what did you think? What did I give it? An eight and a half, something like that. Something similar to you.
Okay.
Just because I went, Jesus, did you see that? And then, like I say, the dark, scary stuff coming out of darkness and stuff is always awesome. So that's awesome.
I'm on the same page as you guys. Definitely on the scarier end. And I think I would suggest seeing it in the theater if you can, because it sounds like it's still in there.
Very good, very good. All right, let's jump into the disturbometer.
Oh, it could be pretty disturbing to some people, I would think. Like all the different types of things, like we were talking about, like the police business, the Me Too world had been touched, what actually is going on eventually when you find out. It's pretty disturbing, you know, and then kind of the backstory of all that. So I'd say it's pretty damn disturbing, or it's moderately high. Is that what they say, Jeff?
You can say whatever you want, I think.
Yeah, it's a moderately high for me.
Yeah, it's pretty dang disturbing, like you say.
So it's not a 10 out of 10 Cannibal Holocaust disturbing, but it's disturbing.
Like a 7 out of 10?
I'd give it an 8.
There you go. Grave Robber Jeff, your favorite category. Let's talk about the gore.
I'm trying to remember, because there are a few deaths, but was there anything over the top gory? Or was it just...
Yes.
Was there?
Yes. Death
was there. I can't remember.
Like the first death, man?
And the last death? Well, the second last death?
Oh, yeah. Last death. Yeah, I forgot about that.
I like the old arm getting ripped off.
Well, we've got arms being ripped off, we've got heads being ripped apart, we've got heads being slammed against stone walls. We got lots and lots of gory stuff in there. It's pretty gory.
Pretty gory. I'd say, like, you know, I'd give it a 6.5 out of 10. What do you guys think?
That's about right.
Yeah.
Hey, there you go. Kind of gory. 6.5 out of 10.
Okay, and this one's going to make you guys regret bringing this one back. The hilarity meter.
Oh, yeah. Was there any hilarity in this movie? I'm going to say it's not very funny at all.
Yeah,
do you know what I'm saying?
There is no humor in this thing.
Yeah.
You
but
don't
it's not
say.
Like, it's not like all grim, though. Like, at parts, it's enjoyable, but it's not funny.
Very few parts that are enjoyable. And even when it's enjoyable, you're like letting your guard down just a little bit to be enjoyable.
Yeah.
Without really believing that you can.
There is nothing funny about this piece of work, as they say.
No, everything's taken very seriously and very realistically, which makes what happens that much more
impactful.
Actually,
you know what? I did laugh when she said, "Hell no," or whatever she said.
Well, that's true. That's true.
But that's the only funny part of the entire movie. Hoots and such, everybody. Let me grab this one by the horns, as they say. Hoots and such, and wangs and things. There's some fake hoots flopping around here and there. We'll just leave it at that.
It's weird. It's because we can't talk about it.
There's hoots and such, but it's not what you would expect. Let's just say that the hoots and such and the disturbometer kind of overlap on this one.
I guess you can kind of say something like that, yeah.
All right, gentlemen, I think we're ready for our final ratings.
Well, let me go first there, guys, because I picked this movie, eh? Does that make sense? Or does anybody else want to go first?
You go first.
I'll go first. Thanks, guys. Well, I tell you what, this was very enjoyable. There were parts where I was bugged because of what the characters did. But I'm along the lines of, if they don't do it, then you don't got a movie. Am I correct? So you kind of have to put up with some of the awful decisions. But I enjoyed everything. The ending, But I gave it an 8 out of 10, and it was close to an 8.5 out of 10. But an 8 out of 10. So it was a very good movie for me. Maybe even an 8.5 out of 10. 8 out of 10 for Barbarian.
I had no idea what to expect from this movie going in. And I think that's what makes it so effective, is because as everything's revealed to you, it's really got an impact behind it. And the acting's great. I don't know if we stress that enough. The pacing is really good. It does feel like two movies. I love that feeling. There are a couple of other movies that had that same feel. I don't want to talk about them because to talk about parallels like that might give away too much of the story. So I'm just going to say I wasn't bothered by character decisions. I mean, for the most part, it was fairly realistic. I mean, yes, there were some decisions that had they been made differently, then things would have turned out a lot differently. But it was about the characters and who was making the decisions, and it made sense. So very scary, very impactful. I think I got to go with an 8.5 as well. Or you said 8, but I'm going to go for an 8.5.
I said 8. Well, I was pretty close to an 8.5.
Yeah, it's up there. And especially
I'm going to give it an 8.25.
You're pulling a grave robber, Jeff.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, especially for a movie that I had no idea what it was. I like being surprised, and this movie surprised me, and what the movie was about surprised me. So, there you go.
Sick.
There was a lot that was well done in this one, like you guys have already touched upon. For me, it's kind of this hasn't happened for a while, where the first half is excellent, and the last bit leave something to be desired, which I still don't know why it's so hard to get something, at least from my point of view, to be great from start to end.
Because you have high standards.
To a degree. But it's just when I was watching that, like, and thinking, wow, this is really good, you just want it to resolve and be really good, you know? And it just wasn't that for me. It was just a bit too, almost too hokey at the end. I wasn't satisfied with how they wrapped it up, which is disappointing because the first two-thirds was very good. So, with that, it's kind of like echoing everything you guys already talked about. But it's still definitely one you should see. I'll come up with a 7.3.
Oh, that's pretty good then.
Jeff's a hard man to please.
Yeah, I didn't like the end.
Because I'm kind of on board with you, but I think the rest of it was kind of enough for me to be
happy. The rest was good, yeah, but the ending has to be at least, like, it's almost the ending was bad.
So what about the ending didn't you like? I'm curious.
Everything. Oh my God, it sucked.
I 100% see where you're coming from.
All right, everybody. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please write us at watchouthorror@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, www.watchouthorror.com, where you can find links to all of our social media accounts, including @watchouthorror on Twitter and @watchouthorrorcast on Instagram. As we are recording this on Halloween Eve, hope you all enjoyed your Halloween season this year. And we're very grateful that you took time out to hang out with us and listen to us talk about horror movies. We couldn't do it without you. So, until next time. And there will be a next time. Be safe, treat each other well, and go watch some horror movies.
Thank you for listening to Watch Out. The opinions you've just heard have been made by three guys from Canada. Please keep this in mind and enjoy responsibly.
Grave Robber Jeff, did you have... Oh, goddamn Xbox. Jesus Christ.
Oh, Jason's online. Yep. It says Jason the Terrible's online or whatever it says. Hey, this movie cost $10.5 million to make, and it's already made like $40,000 in the U.S. and Canada.
You mean $42
million? Oh, yeah. Yep. It's the final! And then we say, rating. Do-do-do-do. Right, that'd be hilarious.